The headlines. Yemenis take to the streets in nationwide rallies to mark the 7th anniversary of the Saudi-led war in their country. Ukraine urges energy-producing countries to boost their oil and natural gas output to replace Russian supplies. Qatar says no one can replace Russian supplies. Plus, Iran says it reserves the right for drilling in Arash gas field in the Persian Gulf, warning that a decision by Kuwait and Saudi Arabia to produce gas at the shared field is illegal. Thanks for joining us. Yemenis fill the streets in masses across the nation to mark the 7th anniversary of the Saudi-led war on their country. On the National Day of Resilience, protests were held in several cities, including Sada, Haja, Marib, and the capital Sana'a. The demonstrators denounced the years-long Saudi aggression on Yemen. This after Saudi Arabia launched a series of attacks on Yemen in response to Friday's missile strikes by the Yemeni army. At least 8 people, including women and children, were killed in airstrikes by Saudi warplanes on residential areas in Sana'a. Several other provinces were also hit similar strikes. The Yemeni strikes on Friday hit facilities of the Saudi state-run oil giant Aramco in Jeddah. Crucial sites in Riyadh were also targeted.
In response to the ongoing unjust siege on our country and our people, the Yemen Armed Forces underwent the third breaking siege operation through ballistic missiles and drones in the following manner. We targeted Aramco facilities in Jeddah and other locations in the capital of our Saudi enemy, Riyadh. The targeting of Ras Tanura and Rabigh refineries with a large number of drones. The targeting of Aramco in Jizan and Najran with a large number of drones. Targeting locations in Jizan and Dahran in the south, as well as Abha and Khams Masjid with ballistic missiles. The armed forces will continue to carry out attacks on important targets with the aim of breaking the siege.
Facilities belonging to the Saudi state oil company were also hit in Jizan and Najran in the south. The Yemeni army also says it launched drone attacks against oil refineries in the east of the kingdom. According to the army, multiple vital targets in several other locations, including in Abha in the Asir region, have also been hit by ballistic missiles. The army says it will continue its retaliatory military operations until Riyadh stops its aggression and lifts its all-out siege on Yemen. Leader of the Ansarullah movement, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, has condemned the international community for remaining silent in the face of what he called Saudi crimes against the Yemeni people.
Saudi Arabia's brutal war on Yemen has entered its 8th year. In March 2015, Saudi Arabia, in collaboration with a number of its allies, launched a bloody war against Yemen. The United States and several Western countries, including France and the UK, provided the Saudi-led coalition with arms and logistics support. The armaments that the U.S. has been providing the invading coalition have included precision ammunition, which the Saudi-led aggressors have been using amply against residential areas and other civilian targets. Soon after Riyadh began the war, the Pentagon started assigning a commando unit to the border between Saudi Arabia and Yemen to help the kingdom in the face of Yemeni defense forces' increasingly sophisticated retaliatory attacks. American military personnel have also been attending command and control centers on the Saudi and Emirati territories so they can best advise the countries about how to proceed with the war.
The Saudi regime, along with the UAE, backed by the United States and its allies in the region, including most notoriously Israel, continue to push for a wide-scale military operation against Yemen and the Yemeni people.
The objective was to return to power the former Riyadh-backed regime and to crush the popular Ansarullah resistance movement, which has been running state affairs in the absence of an effective government in Yemen. In 2014, the people of Yemen led a popular uprising against the Saudi-backed unpopular regime of Abdurrahman Mansur Hadi. As protests gripped the country, the Ansarullah resistance movement took control of the capital Sana'a, following a rapid advance south from their northern stronghold of Sada'a. The popular protests were against the incompetent and corrupt regime in Sana'a, backed by Riyadh. In a bid to crush the resistance and reinstall the Hadi regime, a Saudi-led coalition launched a ferocious bombing campaign on the neighboring Arab country barely 6 months later.
they are fighting against these imperialist forces that are coming to destroy Yemen. And so we see that continuously the Saudis, along with Sudanese mercenaries, the UAE, and other mercenary forces, backed by US and Israel and NATO countries, continue to provide weaponry to bombard and kill indiscriminately civilians, to destroy civilian infrastructure.
With the war in Yemen dragging on, one thing has become obvious. The Yemeni army has made great strides in resisting the bombardments and countering the Saudi-led coalition with missiles and drone attacks.
The ferocious bombing campaign on Yemen and the subsequent war that was launched in the country has stopped well shy of all of its goals. But the war has killed tens of thousands of Yemenis and has turned the entire country into the scene of the world's worst humanitarian crisis.
The United States military-industrial complex, the national security state, along with its regional and international partners, continue to push for war, continue to push for the destruction of the Houthi forces, and want to see a Yemen that is under imperial domination and that is beholden to Washington, to Tel Aviv.
The Saudi-led coalition has been preventing fuel shipments from reaching Yemen while looting the impoverished nation's resources. UN officials estimate that more than 3 million Yemenis have fled their homes due to the war. Nearly 300,000 people have also sought asylum in other countries. Internally displaced Yemenis often must cope with a lack of food and inadequate shelter. Many Yemenis who have not fled are also suffering, especially those in need of health care. The UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, describes the conflict as a living hell for children, with 1.8 million under the age of 5 suffering from severe malnutrition. The UN has said it needs billions of dollars to help the 17.2 million people. According to the UN Office for Humanitarian Coordination Affairs, more than 23 million out of the 31.9 million people in Yemen face hunger, disease, and other life-threatening risks as the country's basic services and economy are collapsing. The war has also devastated Yemen's infrastructure. Dozens of schools, hospitals, health facilities, factories and refineries have also been destroyed.
But we've seen also the Houthis gain the upper hand. In recent days, Yemeni forces have taken a wide swath of territory and just recently have targeted again Aramco oil facilities. So this war shows no sign of letting up, but it's clear that the Yemeni people will continue to fight and to struggle for their national liberation and for their right to self-determination.
However, Yemeni armed forces and allied popular committees have grown steadily in strength against the Saudi-led invaders and have left Riyadh and its allies bogged down in the country.
Social media users have made comments on the 7th anniversary of the Yemen war, as well as the latest retaliatory attacks against Saudi Arabia. Let's watch and listen to some of those comments in today's edition of Hashtag Trending.
Hey everyone, Ali Reza here. As Yemen marks the 7th anniversary of the Saudi-led war against the country, the Yemeni army has launched several coordinated strikes against the Arab Kingdom. So let's review some of the events on the ground as well as the reactions on social media in this edition of Hashtag Trending. The Yemeni army says it has conducted strikes on Aramco oil facilities in the strategic port city of Jeddah, and that their drones have conducted strikes on the Ras Tanura and Rabigh refineries. Crucial facilities in the capital Riyadh, Najran and Jizan also came under attack from Yemen. Yemenis say that the strikes were a response to the continued Saudi aggression against their country and the crippling blockade imposed by the Saudi-led coalition. They say that such strikes will continue until the siege of Yemen is lifted. Our first comment of the day comes from H. Sumeri. the Yemeni army has announced ballistic missile and drone strikes on Riyadh, Jeddah, Jizan, and Najran in Saudi Arabia. Vital infrastructure and oil facilities targeted as part of efforts by the Yemenis to end the Saudi blockade on Yemen. Our next tweet comes from Asaf Bai. Yemeni resistance is stepping up retaliatory strikes deep inside Saudi Arabia for their acts of continuing aggression and siege of Yemen. Tim Anderson has our next tweet. Yemeni cruise missile strikes Saudi Aramco facility in Jeddah. The dirty war on Yemen is sustained by the whole world, minus Iran and Syria, pretending that an exile in Riyadh is president and the coalition government in Sana'a is just rebels or Houthis. Social media users believe that the Yemenis have every right to defend themselves against the Saudi-led aggression and blockade on the country that turned their country, turned Yemen into the world's worst humanitarian crisis, and that's according to the UN. So here are some of those comments. Abbas said, it's the legitimate Yemeni response to 7 years of brutal aggression on Yemen. Saudis can't expect to keep bombing Yemeni cities and not receive a missile strike as retaliation. And even then, the Yemenis show their morals, even in war, where not a single casualty occurred. Ali Yemeni tweeted, in retaliation for over 7 years of Saudi aggression on the people of Yemen, the Saudis are also imposing a siege on all food, medicine, and oil. The Yemeni army has every right to retaliate and defend its people from this unjust war. The USA and UK are supporting the Saudis. And over here, we have a great example of something that the Saudis should know by now. What goes around comes around in this photo right here. A bombing in Sana'a in 2015 and a bombing in Saudi Arabia 2022. With this comment attached to it by Bil Awal, the Saudis started it first in Yemen and made it the worst famine-affected country. Yemen has been suffering for 7 years, and now it's time for retaliation. If Saudi Arabia wants to be saved, it needs to get the hell out of Yemen and stop bombarding it. Meanwhile, voices are rising against Formula One authorities who plan to hold the race in a country that is accused of committing war crimes against Yemen. They say that Riyadh has spent millions upon millions of dollars on lobbyists in the United States to whitewash the war on Yemen. And here's our final batch of comments for today. The next tweet comes from @WarPowersReform. March 26th marks the 7th anniversary of the disastrous war in Yemen, which has resulted in almost 500,000 deaths. The Saudis have spent more than $100 million on lobbyists and public relations specialists in the U.S. to whitewash the war. Thank you. Time to get back to the studio for the rest of the world news.
This is day 31 of Russia's military campaign in Ukraine. Let's take a look at the latest developments of the conflict. Moscow says it has launched a missile attack against a military target in eastern Ukraine. The Defense Ministry has released footage of the moment its caliber cruise missiles were fired from the sea. Meanwhile, Kyiv says that it has reached an agreement with Moscow to set up 10 humanitarian corridors to evacuate civilians from battle zones. This says over 100,000 people still need to be evacuated from the besieged city of Mariupol. Meanwhile, in Poland's capital, U.S. President Joe Biden has met with a number of Ukrainian officials, including the foreign and defense ministers. Before we continue with the news, the breaking news there regarding the JCPOA revival talks, in which Iran's foreign minister, Amir Abdullahian, has made a statement saying that Iran is going to continue with the Vienna talks in order to remove sanctions, and that that is a top priority. Of course, we have Enrique Mora, who is in Iran's capital, Tehran, in order to, in his words, finalize this JCPOA talks, and its outcome still remains unknown at this point, but that's the latest stance that Iran has regarding the talks. Further statements coming from Iran's foreign minister, Amir Abdullahian, of which he has said in an interview that Iran will never forego nuclear achievements. Again, further statements coming from the Iranian foreign minister, warning against the normalization of Israeli regime by certain regional countries. Some statements coming there from apparently an interview that the Iranian foreign minister has had. Iran has rejected as illegal a decision by Kuwait and Saudi Arabia to produce gas at a Persian Gulf field shared by the three countries, saying that it reserves the right for drilling in Arash gas field. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh says, based on international regulations, Any decision to tap Arash Field has to be discussed with all parties, including Tehran. He said the agreement is illegal and in contrast to previous negotiations. Khatibzadeh noted that the gas field is a joint field between Iran, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia, while parts of it are located in areas between Iran and Kuwait whose water boundaries have not been defined. Earlier, the two Arab countries signed a deal to ramp up the output of gas reserves, ignoring Iran's right in the Persian Gulf area. The volcano erupts near the Philippines capital, forcing thousands of residents to flee their homes. Taal volcano, located in a lake south of Manila, had a brief but powerful explosion. It sent ash and steam hundreds of meters into the sky and spewed a 1.5-kilometer plume. Thousands have been ordered to leave their homes amid warnings of further eruptions. Taal is one of the most active volcanoes in the Philippines, which is periodically hit by eruptions and earthquakes. The last time the Taal volcano erupted was in January 2020, when almost 40 people were killed. And that is for this edition of World News. Do stay with us.
About you, IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Beautiful Nowruz customs in Iran. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, we are with you with another episode of Nowruz special series. Nowruz has its roots in thousands of years ago. Islam respected Nowruz feast, although it rejected superstitions that had been added to it. Furthermore, Islam approves of happiness, but it tries to omit sinful acts from ceremonies and blend every feast and ceremony with remembrance of God and admonishment. In this episode, we are going to talk more about Nowruz traditions in different regions of Iran. Hope you'll enjoy it. The last Iranian month of Esfand is famous for busy bazaars and malls as people rush for buying Nowruz-related items. Everyone wants to make a change in their life. People in different cities and villages of Iran set a tablecloth called haftsin, meaning seven items beginning with the Farsi letter sin, corresponding with S in English. These items include somar, or sumac, symbolizing life and vividness, serke, or vinegar, symbolizing patience, sir, or garlic, symbolizing health and disinfection, senjed, or oleaster fruit, symbolizing love and rationality, sib, or apple, symbolizing health and beauty, samanu, or fresh wheat shoots, pudding, symbolizing sweetness of life, and sabze, or green sprouts of wheat, peas, or lentils, symbolizing freshness, revival, and rebirth. However, it is also believed that sekke, or coin, is also an item in haftsin tablecloth. Moreover, the adherents of Nowruz culture often put other items in the tablecloth, such as colorful eggs, a mirror, a copy of the Noble Quran, and redfish. Many people in various cities of Iran prepare homemade cookies and sweets for Nowruz. Exchange of visits as an important means of training plays an important role in the Islamic lifestyle. This Islamic custom is very significant in reinforcing family bonds and social reform, basically keeping and strengthening bonds with relatives has been highly recommended in the Quran and remarks of Prophet Muhammad and his infallible successors, blessings of God upon them. This highly recommended custom is manifested in material, spiritual, emotional, and psychological helps. Islam has highly stressed family bonds. God says in verse 3 of chapter Nisa, "Worship Allah and do not ascribe any partners to him and be good to parents." Iranians since old times have been accustomed to exchanging of visits and gathering together. During Nowruz, younger ones often pay a visit to the elderly, as they consider it as a means of acquiring divine blessing. Thus, the grandmothers and grandfathers usually give their grandchildren and children money called AD. According to the Islamic narrations, visiting a brother in faith equals visiting God on his throne. If a faithful solves a problem of his brother in faith, God will solve 70 problems of him on the Day of Judgment. Another nice custom in Nowruz is to make peace between brothers and friends. Islam has highly stressed to give up spites and grudges and reconcile. A famous hadith reads that if two faithful brothers are spiteful toward each other for 3 consecutive days, the spirit of faith will leave them and their worship will not be accepted. In view of this, some people try to act as go-between to make peace between their brothers. Once Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, said to his companions, "Do you want me to inform you of something better than prayer and fasting?" They said, "Yes, Messenger of Mercy." The Prophet said, "Reconciliation with each other." One of the best ways to spend one's leisure time in Islam is to travel. There are many verses in the Quran which invite people to travel all over the earth to see the signs of God everywhere. Traveling to different places causes us to understand better the realities of creation and to be admonished. For instance, verse 20 of chapter Ankabut reads, "Say, travel over the land and then observe how He has originated the creation. Then Allah shall bring about the genesis of the hereafter. Indeed, Allah has power over all things." The human spirit gets bored of everyday works and it needs renewal of energy and vividness. The arrival of spring and Nowruz festivities provide humans the opportunity to travel and entertain. Entertainment makes the spirit sprightly and helps us pursue our goals in life better. Traveling naturally brings about happiness. This is one of the greatest blessings of traveling. Human psyche and thought grow and thrive through communications. Human beings get familiar with different cultures and traditions via traveling. Traveling adds to one's knowledge too. Well, time is over for this episode. Next time, we will continue our discussion on Nowruz. God bless you.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program for humanity. We are looking at human rights from the perspective of the commander of the faithful, Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi as-salam. And you can find that Amir al-Mu'mineen has summarized all the human rights that we require in the letter to his commander, Malik al-Ashtar Ridwanullahi alayhi. Amongst the things that deals with the human rights that Amir al-Mu'mineen mentions in this letter, he says to him, "Keep at a distance one who exposes the weakness of others. After all, the masses are not free from weaknesses. It is the duty of the ruler to shield them. Now, being protected is a human right. I need to feel safe from whatever weakness that I might have. I should not be exposed, especially when we are dealing with small communities where everything could be exposed. Now, any community, every community, have their own weaknesses. They have their own faults. Should we pick on that? Should we try to defame them for these mistakes, or should we cover it?" Now, even on a personal note, from a moral and ethical perspective, that when a person does a mistake and you see a person committing a mistake, especially if it's done in private, we are being told and commanded to conceal their mistakes and their faults, not expose them. For exposing them, we can fall into many sins, amongst of which ghibah and sedition. So we should not indulge ourselves in that. So he says to them, it is the duty of the ruler, it is the duty of the governments, it is the duty of the people in power to make sure that people are shielded and safe and protected from the mistakes. And he says to him, do not bring to light that which is hidden. Sometimes people make mistakes. But however you see, when those rulers go on TV or interviews, they try to shift the blame from themselves and place it on people. And they pinpoint to certain acts that happens within people themselves. So they try to prey on the mistakes of people in order for them to shift the blame from themselves. So he says to him, at the end of the day, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala watches everything. So you conceal, you hide, let Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala deal with it. And then he says to him, among the things that a person needs to do on a personal level with his fellow human beings, or if a person is in power and in position, he says to him, untie every knot of hatred for the people and cut asunder every string of enmity between them. Now, it's natural for us as human beings to have hatred towards one another because we get into conflicts, arguments, fights, and what have you. So this is created. The rule, the duty of the ruler, it should be that which unties these knots of hate and tries to create peace and love within a system. Let us take a break and then we'll continue right after.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are still listening to the program For Humanity. So Amir al-Mu'minin salamullah alayhi says to Malik, you need to make sure that you get rid of and eliminate hatred from within a community and society. Obviously, it's a basic right as well. And then he says to him, protect yourself from every such act as may not be quite correct for you. Do not make haste in seeking confirmation of tale-telling, for the tale-teller is a deceitful person appearing in a garb of a friend. Now, also, when it comes to rulers and those who are in power, they need to make sure that they are protected from committing mistakes and wrongs, and they should have the right people around them. Because sometimes we see in many systems and countries around this and around the world, when they have, for example, the spy agencies like the CIA, KGB, Mossad, and what have you. All these agencies, sometimes, if not all the times, they bring wrong information to their systems just to create havoc in the world. I mean, obviously, that's their purpose. But let's assume we have a proper system in place. Amir al-Mu'minin says, you have to make sure that those that gives you the news, those that bring you information, are not the type that they close themselves in the garment of a friend, but in fact they are deceitful people. So you see that this happens most of the times within people in power, where when I have a problem, an issue with a friend or with people, and I try to harm them, I go and tell stories about them to the government and make lies and make accusations, and those people end up being imprisoned or end up being harmed. So Amir Amin Salamullah alayhi says to Malik, it's a duty upon you to protect your community, to serve the community in the best way you can. And having to, and you have to start by protecting yourself from not having deceitful people around you. Those people should not be around you. They should not be in your cabinet. They should not be in your parliament. They should not be in your advisors. Because those people obviously don't care about human rights. Obviously they don't care about people. They only care about themselves. So therefore that should be taken into consideration. And again, the public or the masses, they have the right over everything, that everything needs to be done for them in a way as they deserve. So Amir al-Mu'minin Salamullah Ali, in this letter to Malik al-Ashtar, and this is just the beginning, the first few paragraphs of it, where he talks about how man should be dealt with in a just manner. How people, when I say man, obviously I mean people in general, they should be, their rights should be maintained, and their freedom should be given to them, and their affairs should be sorted. No country, no group of people should suffer, especially when we look at a modern world like ours, where everything is available, but sometimes we become the devils and we try to prevent other fellow human beings from indulging and having what we have in order to make their lives better. Rather, we do our best to make sure that they suffer the most, because we look at them as enemies rather equal in humanity. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi.
In like steps with spring, the season of renewal and freshness, and the greening of nature, we here at IRIB English Radio wish you happiness, prosperity, and good health.
In the limelight.
What did Justice Clarence Thomas know, and when did he know it? The question usually gets directed at politicians, not judges. But it is a fair one in the light of the revelation on Thursday, 24th of March, that Justice Clarence Thomas's wife, Ginny Thomas, was working feverishly behind the scenes and to a far greater degree than she previously admitted, in a high-level effort to overturn the 2020 presidential election. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist, Jesse Wegman. Jesse Wegman is a member of the editorial board of the newspaper. The piece is titled, Ginny and Clarence Thomas Have Done Enough Damage. What did Justice Clarence Thomas know, and when did he know it? The question usually gets directed at politicians, not judges. But it's a fair one in the light of the revelation on Thursday, 24th of March, that Justice Clarence Thomas's wife, Ginny Thomas, was working feverishly behind the scenes and to a far greater degree than she previously admitted, in a high-level effort to overturn the 2020 U.S. presidential election. As the Washington Post and CBS News first reported, Ms. Thomas, a supremely well-connected right-wing agitator, was in constant communication with the White House in the weeks following the 2020 presidential election, strategizing over how to keep Donald Trump in office despite his incontrovertible loss. "Do not concede," she texted to Mark Meadows, Donald Trump's chief of staff, on 6th of November, the day before the major news networks called the election for Joe Biden. "It takes time for the army who is gathering for his back. To date, Donald Trump has not conceded." In dozens of messages with Mark Meadows over several weeks, Ginny Thomas raged over baseless allegations of voter fraud and shared unhinged conspiracy theories, including one that the Biden crime family was in the process of being arrested and sent to Guantanamo Bay for ballot fraud. "Help this great president stand firm, Mark," Ginny Thomas wrote at one point. "The majority knows Biden and the left is attempting the greatest heist in U.S. history." Ginny Thomas had already acknowledged some involvement in the fight over the 2020 election count, recently confirming that she attended the 6th of January Stop the Steal rally in Washington. But she said she went home before Donald Trump spoke to the crowd and before a mob of hundreds stormed the Capitol in a violent attempt to block the certification of Joe Biden's Electoral College victory. The text revealed that her efforts to subvert the election were far more serious than we knew. Now recall that in January, the Supreme Court rejected Donald Trump's request to block the release of White House records relating to the 6th of January Capitol attack. Mark Meadows had submitted a brief in the case supporting Donald Trump. The court's ruling came as an unsigned order with only one noted dissent, that of Justice Thomas. Perhaps Justice Clarence Thomas was not aware of his wife's text message campaign to Mark Meadows at the time, but it sure makes you wonder, doesn't it? And that's precisely the problem. We shouldn't have to wonder. The Supreme Court is the most powerful judicial body in the country. And yet, as Alexander Hamilton reminded us, it has neither the sword nor the purse as a means to enforce its rulings. It depends instead on the American people's acceptance of its legitimacy, which is why the justices must make every possible effort to appear fair, unbiased, and beyond reproach. That may seem naive, particularly in the face of the crippling assaults on the court that Mitch McConnell and his Senate Republicans have carried out over the past 6 years in order to secure a right-wing supermajority that often resembles a judicial policy arm of the Republican Party. Starting with their theft of a vacancy that was President Barack Obama's to fill and continuing through the last-second confirmation of Amy Coney Barrett, while millions of American voters were already in the process of casting Donald Trump out of office. And yet, the public's demand for basic fairness and judicial neutrality is not only proper, but critical to the Supreme Court's integrity, as the justices, whoever nominated them, are well aware of. Partly in response to the court's tanking public approval ratings, several of them have grown increasingly outspoken in defense of their independence, though not all of them. The most obvious way for justices to demonstrate that independence in practice, of course, is to recuse themselves from any case in which their impartiality might reasonably be questioned. It does not matter whether there is, in fact, a conflict of interest. The mere appearance of bias or conflict should be enough to compel Justice Clarence Thomas or any other member of the Supreme Court to step aside. Many of them have over the years, out of respect for the court as an institution and for the public's faith in their probity. Just this week, Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson vowed that, if confirmed, she would recuse herself from an upcoming case challenging Harvard's affirmative action policies because of her multiple personal and professional connections to Harvard University. Legal ethics experts are not even in agreement that her recusal would be necessary, but Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson is right to err on the side of caution. Justice Clarence Thomas has paid lip service to this ideal. I think the media makes it sound as though you are just always going right to your personal preference, he said in a speech last year. That's a problem. You're going to jeopardize any faith in the legal institutions. Bench memo to the justice. You know what jeopardizes public faith in legal institutions? Refusing to recuse yourself from numerous high-profile cases in which your wife has been personally and sometimes financially entangled, as the New Yorker reported back in January. Especially when you have emphasized that you and she are melded into one being, or when you have, as the Times magazine reported last month, appeared together with her for years at highly political events hosted by advocates hoping to sway the court. Ginny Thomas's efforts and her husband's refusal to respond appropriately have been haunting the court for years, but this latest conflagration shouldn't be a close call. The texts are the narrowest way of looking at this, Stephen Gillers, at New York University law professor and one of the nation's foremost legal ethics experts, told me. She signed up for Stop the Steal. She was part of the team, and that team had an interest in how the court would rule. That's all I need to know. He said he has over the years resisted calling for Justice Clarence Thomas's recusal based on his wife's actions, but they've really abused that tolerance. Yes, married people can lead independent professional lives, and it is not a justice's responsibility to police the actions of his or her spouse. But the brazenness with which the Thomases have flouted the most reasonable expectations of judicial rectitude is without precedent. From the Affordable Care Act to the Trump administration's Muslim ban to the 2020 election challengers, Ginny Thomas has repeatedly embroiled herself in big-ticket legal issues and with litigants who have wound up before her husband's court. All the while, he has looked the other way, refusing to recuse himself from any of these cases. For someone whose job is about judging, Justice Clarence Thomas has, in this context at least, demonstrated abominably poor judgment. If Justice Clarence Thomas were sitting on any other federal court in the country, he would likely have been required by the Code of Judicial Ethics to recuse himself many times over. But the code does not apply to Supreme Court justices, creating a situation in which the highest court in the land is also the most unaccountable. This is not tolerable. For years, Congress has tried in vain to extend the ethics code to the Supreme Court. For the sake of fundamental fairness and consistency, the code must apply to all federal judges. It would, at the very least, force the hand of those like Justice Clarence Thomas, who seem unmoved by any higher sense of duty to the institution or to the American people, who have agreed to abide by its rulings. The court is in deep trouble these days, pervaded by what Justice Sonia Sotomayor recently called the stench of partisanship, a stench arising in no small part from the Thomas's behavior. It is hard to imagine that the other Supreme Court justices, regardless of their personal politics, aren't bothered. No one should have to choose between their devotion to their spouse and their duty to the nation. But Justice Clarence Thomas has shown himself unwilling or unable to protect what remains of the Supreme Court's reputation from the appearance of extreme bias he and his wife have created. He would do the country a service by stepping down and making room for someone who won't have that problem. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. this humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a beautiful hadith which has been narrated from the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And this hadith is about the prohibition of giving gifts to administrators, in the sense that, let's say that you want to do something, or you want some work. You have some need and you want something done, and in order for it to get done, you have to go through, somebody, some big shot, some administrator. And so in order to do that, you go and you give him a gift, like a bribe or something. Right, so in this tradition, the Prophet, he talks about this. Let's just set up the context about in which and the circumstances in which the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam mentioned this tradition, and then we can mention the tradition itself. Abu Hamid Ash-Shahidi said the following: the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam employed a man from the tribe of Bani Asad who was called Ibn al-Utbiyah to go and collect some charity from some people. Right, so the Prophet, he delegated this person from the tribe of Bani Asad to go and get some charity from some people, and bring it back to him. Okay. So this person went, and when he came back, he said the following to the Prophet. He gave a portion to the Prophet. He said, "This is for you." And he kept something and said, "This was given to me as a gift by somebody." And he assumed that the possession of this donation, a portion of it, was for himself. He was allowed to keep it. And somebody probably, he wanted something from this person, and he gave this person a gift in order for his, stuff to get done. So the Prophet, when he heard this, he ascended the pulpit. He praised Allah and extolled him and said, "What is it with the administrator who we send to work? And when he comes back and says, this is for you and this is for me. He should sit in his house of his mother and father and see if he is given a gift or not. By he who owns my soul, anything that he takes, he will be carrying on his neck on the day of resurrection." Meaning this bribe that he has taken, it will be a burden for him on the day of resurrection. He will be punished for it. This is a sin that he has committed by taking this bribe. Anything that he takes, he will be carrying on his neck on the day of resurrection, even if it is a grumbling camel, a bellowing cow, or a moaning sheep. Even if it's something as insignificant as these animals, still it will be a burden for this person on the day of resurrection. This is why in another tradition, the Prophet said, "Gifts to administrators of the government are forbidden, all kinds of them." Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the prohibition of gifts to administrators in the words of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allah.